This is the OANDA podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
Yes, welcome to this week's OANDA weekly podcast, brought to you with the Jazz FM Business Breakfast. I'm Johnny Hart. Each week, of course, we review the business and market stories that made the headlines, as well as look forward to the business week ahead with OANDA senior market analyst Craig Earlham. And it's hello to Craig. How are you doing, Craig?
I'm very good, Johnny. How are you?
Yes, it's been a quiet week, hasn't it? Is it something to do with the half-term holidays? I mean, if you compare it with the previous week, it was pretty sedate. But what was the Craig Earlham market moment of the week?
Well, that's a lot harder this week, as you point out, than the last couple of weeks. And I don't think it's a coincidence that maybe these half-term holidays or the holiday period seem to coincide with quieter weeks. In terms of the actual moment of the week, I think, again, it's not necessarily this one big major story. I think it's the markets showing some resilience in general, and it's something that is quite impressive. I believe that the 5 days leading up to today, for example, in the US, was the biggest gain in the S&P since 2011, and I think it was. So it just shows the resilience that there still are in these markets, the fact that we can put together five or six straight days of gains. When only a week ago we were talking about, is this one blip or is it a longer term concern? And what we've seen this week suggests that it's just a blip. Hopefully that will continue. As I said last time, the fundamentals are still strong.
Somebody did very well out of the turbulence of those 2 weeks, didn't they?
I'm sure they did, and I'm sure there's plenty of people who did very, very badly as well.
That is very true. The pound hit $1.40 again, and that is partially due to US factors, but also markets are still betting on an increase in rates following that inflation figure, which is stubbornly at 3%.
It is, and I think there's going to be a number of contributing factors feeding into that. I think it's worth pointing out that when we talk about the pound, we're always referencing it against the dollar. And as you say, there are dollar factors playing a part in that. The dollar has continued to be weak. So when we're talking about the pound being above 140 against the dollar, back technically at pre-Brexit levels, this isn't a sign that it was all for nothing and that the pound is great and that everything is great. It's a sign that the pound's doing a lot better than it was, and we cannot deny that for a second, but it's also a sign that the dollar is weaker than what it has been.
So it's the euro, really, isn't it, that we need to look at for a real indicator?
I would say so, because at the end of the day, the Brexit process, we are effectively in this together. We're going to gain together as a result of any deal. We're also going to be worse off together. Now, who will be worse off is always going to be up for debate, but this is going to be the real measure of who has done better out of this process and what people believe to be who's done better out of this process. But as you mentioned, we look at the inflation data this week and the fact that it remains stubbornly high at 3%, again, a number of contributing factors. But ultimately, what's important is, what does that mean for market expectations for interest rates? Because that's what moves the currency. And what that means is that people were already talking a lot about a May rate hike from the Bank of England, and maybe even one later this year. And this seems to have just solidified that, because the Bank of England's language has become more hawkish. They have talked about wanting to get inflation back towards target of 2% within the next 2 years rather than the next 3 years. This all does just seem to set the scene for at least one rate hike, maybe even two this year. And again, very debatable as to whether that's the correct decision.
Doesn't seem to make a great deal of sense to put rates up, to be perfectly honest, at this stage of proceedings, because our economy is potentially very fragile indeed. I know we talked about this last week and the various bits of forward guidance that Governor Mark Carney has given over the last couple of years or so. I'm still reluctant to say, yeah, it's nailed on for May.
Even up until the last couple of weeks, I've been more in the camp of, a part of me still thinks we're not even going to see an interest rate hike this year, because I think it would be mad to. We look at the things that are driving inflation at the minute.
Exactly.
And they are temporary factors, and they are things that are going to come out in the wash. And whether that takes 6 months, 12 months, or a little bit longer, that's irrelevant. And it's almost like the governor and his colleagues are looking at the rate of the pound and saying, well, the one way we can overcome some of these shorter-term factors is to get the pound higher. And the way we can do that is by raising interest rates. Now, of course, it's not going to be that simple, and I'm not saying it necessarily is the reason. But I do struggle to see the reason why they are doing it, because
it's not based on demand from the great British public, is it?
It's not, and that's normally why these interest rate movements work, because if there's stronger demand pushing up prices, then you do it to rein in demand. And this isn't a demand story. Wages possibly will go up if companies do respond as you expect. But again, that's because there's demand because of the higher cost of living. And again, this is going to be temporary because the cost of living rise has been based on that one temporary shift in the currency. Yeah. So these aren't longer term factors. And the problem that I have with this, and I'm sure the problem that the Bank of England may come to see if they do pursue this, is that once you move past this, effectively what you're doing is you're creating more hurdles for an economy that has enough to deal with.
And conversely, of course, UK retail sales disappointed markets as well, didn't they? So that is a suggestion that the demand isn't there anyway.
Exactly. The consumer squeeze is something that I'm sure everyone is fully aware of right now. And yes, the currency has contributed to that. But we are not looking at a currency now that we were looking at 6 to 12 months ago. The currency has recovered. And with that, the squeeze on the consumer is going to improve as well.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to be solved by higher interest rates. I don't understand how increasing people's credit card bills, increasing people's loan repayments, increasing people's mortgage rates is something that is going to help the consumer and help the economy.
I'd suggest that the Bank of England and many economists are actually just uncomfortable with the length of time we've been at these historically low rates, you know, over a decade now, and they're just thinking, come on, time is up.
I agree, and it's something that I was, prior to the Brexit vote, myself actually suggesting that we did need to see. So prior to the June 2016 referendum, I was saying that once this is out the way, and even earlier than that, the economy's doing well, and there's no denying that. In the time, the economy was doing well. There wasn't much inflation, but growth was decent. We were seeing low levels of unemployment, and we can't just rely on low levels of interest forever. We're going to create the next bubble, is effectively what I was saying. People are going to borrow and borrow and borrow because
the bubble's already there, Craig.
Exactly. And
the amount of unsecured debt out there is frightening.
Exactly. And that is a problem. And that's one of the reasons why I was saying at the time that we did need to see higher rates. But that was in a strong economy. That's not what we are right now. We can pat ourselves on the back for all the resilience. And the economy has shown resilience. It's been helped by external factors. But ultimately, we are one of the slowest growing developed countries out there. The data, they are, at the end of the day, the lines are pointing in the wrong direction. This is not a time to be raising rates for me.
Sounds almost as if Governor Mark Carney wants to be proactive rather than reactive, because that's the way it's been for such a long time now.
He wants to be proactive rather than reactive while pointing to something that allows it to appear reactive.
Yeah.
I've long supported Governor Mark Carney, even though a lot of people have looked for fault in him, particularly around the Brexit referendum. I thought he's come in for a lot of unfair criticism, and his forward guidance was only ever meant to be guidance. But as always, and this isn't just the British public, this is everywhere, someone makes a comment, a judgment, a call, a forecast, and we really tie them down to it. These are never meant to be predictions. They're meant to be forecasts. They're meant to be guidance. And suddenly it seems that we've gone off this course and decided that everything you say has to be absolutely correct or we will call you up on it. But this is one thing when I just think he's just getting it wrong.
Yeah. I have to say, you got to give him his due, because it will live long in the memory, his cool, calm demeanour the morning after Brexit. I mean, that is what markets needed, and he provided that.
He did, and the measures which they announced afterwards I do think contributed to that calm, and they have unwound a large proportion of them. I think the reaction after Brexit was positive, but again, the problem with the whole process and something that really seemed to damage him reputationally was that Brexit itself was such a divisive argument, and then you put the central bank, so it's not just Mark Carney, it is his colleagues as well, you put them right in the middle of it, and you told them they have to remain neutral while given a view. Well, that's extremely difficult.
We should have our weekly Bitcoin / cryptocurrency update, shouldn't we? Because you're fond of talking about that. we seem to have got into a pattern here. So what's the latest?
Well, I think I'm fond of talking about it. And as I found out in the last 6 months, my friends are fond of talking about it. My parents are fond of talking about it. And even my hairdresser's fond of talking about
it.
So we may as well.
It's cut through, isn't it?
Yeah, we may as well have the conversation ourselves. I mean, it is really interesting, because we are not seeing as many big, bold headlines over the last few weeks that we have seen, for example, in January or earlier on in January or later on in December, when it was really driving price down, or even earlier than that, when it was we were seeing positive news flow on a daily basis, which helped this euphoric feeling when it came to cryptos and helped these enormous gains that we were seeing. Instead now, it's been a bit of a period of calm, but the volatility has remained, which has just fed into this incredible story that Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are. When you're looking at the price, again, it almost just moves irrespective of what's actually happening and whether there's any actual need for it. We look at only, say, a week ago and Bitcoin hit this low of $6,000 and today it's testing $10,000. That is an incredible return. That's the 66% return in a week. And ultimately, I can't see any reason why you would, what would warrant such a move to the upside. But that's the great thing about cryptos. And again, if we look at Bitcoin, if we can get past that 10,000 level, then I think that could be, and widely is seen, as a very, very positive bullish move, because all of a sudden it seems to end this series of small corrections, moves to the downside, small correction, move to the downside. That 10,000 level, not only is it taking out levels which were previously holding up the price, but I think the psychological element of it can't be ignored either. $10,000, remember back on November 28th, this was seen as the one. Bitcoin is going through 10,000. It was everywhere in the news. And before you knew it, 2 weeks later, it was at 20,000. I don't think that will happen again, but it just shows the importance that psychology can have in markets.
Finally, Craig, let's have a quick preview of the week ahead. What should we look out for?
I think the UK is going to remain a key focus next week. We have the jobs report, which is going to be far more important for me than the retail sales figures today. Retail sales highlights the consumer squeeze. It's not really at the moment a market moving event, because when you tell someone that the consumer is squeezed, everyone will turn around and say, of course they are. We know that. That's not news. But when we're talking about the jobs report next week, we know unemployment's low and job creation is okay. But there's that one figure there which we will be paying very close attention to, and that's earnings. If people's earnings are going up, again, that gives the Bank of England another reason to raise interest rates. So higher earnings, I think we could see plenty of volatility in the pound.
Okay, Craig, we'll speak to you again next week. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, you too.
Was the OANDA podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.